Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca, Mesut Özil.
Is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, good morning to you, and I say that in a spirit of positivity based on our friendship and companionship, because we've got to look for something to cheer us up this morning, because Arsenal sure as fuck are not going to do that.
Fair enough. I respect you for doing that. Before we start, is this show still sponsored by Razor Blades? Because it would be really fitting if so.
We
need to get back in touch with those guys. Suddenly it's really on brand. It's really thematic.
Yeah, we should see if we can get a few more people lined up, like sleeping pills, barbiturates. You know, there's a whole range of sponsors that this podcast could use at this moment in time.
I guess it's not really a goodly morning, but it's kind of a groundhog morning, if you will.
Yes, it is a bit of a groundhog morning. It feels very familiar. We've been here before. We'll be here again, I think, which is the other thing that obviously is a bit tough to deal with this morning. But, where do we start? How do we start?
Well, let me tell you, before we start, I really did my bit. You know the old Arscast Extra rule, something bad happens to James, something good happens to Arsenal. I really tried, guys. On Saturday, I was involved in a quite serious car accident.
What?
My car is officially not working. Half of it's sort of crunched up.
Nobody was hurt, thank God.
Nobody was hurt. I don't want to say too much because I don't really know what the ensuing legal ramifications will be. But let's just say someone was driving a vehicle that they were not necessarily qualified to drive. It was like an allegory for Arsenal, really. Someone was driving a vehicle out of control, and this vehicle collided with my vehicle, and incredibly, nobody was hurt.
That's good. I'm glad nobody was hurt.
But what I mean is, before anyone says, James, you haven't, chucked yourself off a cliff, or you haven't, put yourself in hospital, I tried.
The universe tried, clearly. I'm sure you didn't set out to have a car crash. Actually, the universe tried.
Again, it's very important for legal reasons that I make that clear. I definitely didn't set out to have a car crash.
Well, look, even if the universe is conspiring to work in our favour, the fundamental issues, the problems that Arsenal have go far beyond that. They can...
I know.
Yeah, oh, my God. I'm glad you're all right.
Look, I'm all right. I mean, it's all relative, isn't it? I'm happy I've got my health, but I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't have been the worst thing, guys. I wouldn't have had to watch this game on Sunday.
If only I was a little bit badly injured, that would be fine. A little bit in a coma would have been great. Just for 3 or 4 days.
Honestly, a couple of days, see me through. Maybe until the end of the transfer window.
Exactly.
Hopefully I wake up. I was listening to a thing last night, a program about amnesia. If I woke up with that and didn't remember I was an Arsenal fan, that might be the optimum outcome.
Ooh, yeah.
Can you imagine? I could pick a team all over again.
A lovely relaxing coma. You could get somebody to wash you while you're lying there. And then you wake up and you can just start afresh. But of course, I know, look, we couldn't countenance that, to be honest. You couldn't support another team. You're in it. You're stuck with us. You're here for life. Like the rest of us, we are unwilling, unable to change, and we are slaves to the fortune of this this football club of ours. So
we do not break our contracts.
No, we always respect our contracts. Our contract is...
Our lifelong contract to this misery.
What did we do? Oh, my goodness. Anyway, Right. Let's get into it, will we? Let's start.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
How? Well, why don't you tell me how it's making you feel today, what happened at Anfield?
Today, it's making me feel like banging my head off a wall.
Mm.
Not necessarily in a kind of, like, not like... like that, more like is making me. But you know what, though? Yesterday, I was doing the live blog, and I was chatting with Andrew Allen on the old Gmail chat doohickey there. And sure. I posted a. Actually, this happened twice. Yesterday, we sent each other WhatsApps. We crossed the streams. Basically, you sent one and I sent one. I think mine just said, "This is so bad." And you went something like, "This is appalling."
Yeah, simultaneous.
At exactly the same time. And on the live blog, I posted, "God, I'm bored. I'm bored." And Andrew, like within seconds, went, "God, fucking hell. Arsenal are so boring at the moment." And that was. You know, one of the overriding emotions that I felt that when you watch a game like that, you're often filled with anger and frustration and rage. And if it were the first time or the second time or the third time or the seventh time or the ninth time that you'd seen that performance and that kind of result, then maybe you would be filled with those same things. But there was just I've seen it too many times. I've lived through it too many times to look at the team selection, to look at the way the team is set up, to see the way that the players are playing, to try and understand some of the decisions. But, you know, I felt bored by it. And then I kind of felt guilty for being bored because I shouldn't be bored. You know, there should be more to it. I think, I'm feeling a bit more nuanced about the whole thing. But watching it yesterday, my brother sent me a text after about 10 minutes. He's a Liverpool fan, obviously, and he went, "Ooh, this could be a bit of a long afternoon." I went, "Yeah, I think it could be." And it was. It was one of the longest 90 minutes that I can remember. By about 70 minutes, I was just like, fucking, you know, can we not just get five players sent off and abandon the game and give them a 3-0? It was that yesterday.
Yeah. No, I mean, we gave them a fourth goal instead in the end.
Yeah.
It was absolutely appalling. I mean, there have been many humiliating defeats down the years. I think I saw a stat on Sky. I think since 2013-14, we've played 21 games away to the top six. I think we've won two.
Mm.
I think we've conceded three or four goals, you know, I don't know, on half those occasions or something mental like that.
Yeah.
We've just seen this play out time and time again, but yesterday was particularly bad because at no stage of the game did it feel like a contest. Your brother was right to send you that message after 10 minutes because it was already clear at that point how this was going to go.
Yeah.
And the fact that we didn't even muster a shot on target really sums up, I guess, how timid and poor our performance really was. I know there have been some real low points in recent years, but in terms of the gulf between the sides and the way in which we sort of singularly failed to even make a fist of competing, this one feels particularly bad.
Yeah, you know, you look at Liverpool and, you know, before the game we're saying, okay, this could be a shootout because you've got two defences that aren't really that great, but Liverpool's defence was not troubled at all. They had a fucking clown in goal. That what the fuck is that guy? What is going on with that guy? We'd barely even tested him. There was that early chance for Danny Welbeck that he spooned over, and I think there might have been a shout for a penalty because he was pulled back a little bit. Not that I'm saying that would have changed the trajectory of our performance or anything else, or using it as an excuse. But like to not even give that guy work to do when he's so clearly brittle is just. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that I've got the words to describe
I'm sure we'll get into the specifics, but facing a team, you know, with their second-choice goalkeeper who's clearly low on confidence and yet not playing your club record signing goal scorer, you know, someone to try and get a shot away at him, you know, is absolutely maddening. But we didn't create anything. We at no stage were we really in the game. I mean, I guess when that Welbeck had that chance, I think it was 0-0 at that point. Maybe that was the sort of the closest we came to ever looking like we were actually in the thing.
Mm.
But after that, it was one-way traffic and Liverpool aren't even that brilliant. Like, they have vulnerabilities, like Karius was playing, but then you look at their defence, there's some really dodgy players in that back four. Some really dodgy players. I mean, look at Moreno last season. Look, yeah. I forget the name of the right back, but he's not a special
Gomez.
Player, the guy they got from Charlton, Gomez. Yeah, centre-half, they've had trouble. You know, Hoffenheim caused them all sorts of problems.
Yeah.
We gave ourselves too much credit saying that this was going to be a shootout because, you know, we didn't even have time to draw and they put four bullets in us. It was unbelievable. And, yeah, it was one of the worst performances in terms of the application of the players, in terms of having any sense of... I mean, look, you see teams give up on seasons halfway through and you look at, you know, when you see us pick up results like this in March or April, you think, oh, they've thrown in the towel. I've never seen a team, an Arsenal team, do that or perform in that manner 3 games yeah. into the season.
Yeah. For me, that was the biggest worry, to be perfectly honest, that it is only 3 games in and people will say, it's only 3 games, take a little bit of distance, don't panic. That's what Arsene Wenger said. But, like, I am panicking in the sense that when you see a team... somebody on the Arsenal, I said, look, you know, the manager looks like he's lost the dressing room. The players don't believe in him. And I thought that last season for periods. And then we had that run. We won the FA Cup final. And you think, okay, well, maybe they've rekindled their belief in him. But yesterday, as someone on the Arsenal said this morning, they've downed tools. Some of those players basically downed tools yesterday after 3 games of the season. Some of them looked like they just did not give a shit. And I suppose...
And I think,
go yeah. on.
No, I just think it's fair enough to be alarmed after 3 games because these 3 games have been sort of like Arsenal shit show bingo. I mean, look at the first game against Leicester. We're conceding awful goals from set pieces. Classic yeah. Arsenal bullshit. The second game, we go and lose at Stoke. What could exemplify a weak Arsenal team more than our defeats at Stoke?
Yeah.
And then the third game, we get hammered away to a big side. We are ticking off all the boxes of our worst campaigns in the first month.
Mm. I think what you see on the pitch from players is a real barometer of what's happening at a football club. Because if you looked at this with an objective eye, if you were looking at Manchester United or Chelsea, actually, you know, there are parallels with Chelsea, aren't there? This season that Mourinho got fired. Like, yeah. you look at some of those players and you knew they were going through the motions. Too many of those players are going through the motions for Chelsea. And it was obvious to all of us what the issue was. And it was the manager. Right? They had stopped playing for Jose Mourinho. Whatever the circumstances of that were or whatever was the reason behind that, it was obvious what was happening. And if you look at Arsenal, it's obvious what's happening because nobody's taking any responsibility. People playing like individuals. Nobody even bothering to pull people up on what they should be doing. I mean, all the focus on Aaron Ramsey and the way that he played yesterday, swanning around the pitch, with nobody telling him, look, Jesus Christ, just sit in there beside Granit Xhaka and just add a little bit of stability to our midfield. And people say, well, look, Arsene Wenger has indulged him. He's allowed him to do this. And that's true. It is true. But also, nobody on the pitch seemed to say anything to him. Why did nobody say to Aaron Ramsey, you are a central midfield player, sit there and do the fucking job? I can tell you one thing. I know it's like nonsense, but if I was a center half playing in that team, and one of my central midfielders was doing what Ramsey was doing, you'd have words. You would have very visible words with him on the pitch. You'd have a fucking row on the pitch because you'd be telling him what to do. But nobody said anything. Laurent Koscielny did not say a word to him. Nacho Monreal didn't say a word. Where are the experienced heads? Where's Petr Cech telling Koscielny, talk to him and tell him to fucking sit there. What is going on? And you know what? I was talking to Amy Lawrence a little bit this morning and we were just chatting in general and I was reminded of, do you remember that game a few years ago when Alex Song had come back from his loan at Fulham and it could have been a game like Stoke away or something like that and Kolo Touré had a real go at him? I remember either you were there or someone was there.
Yeah, I think I was there, yeah.
And I remember you tweeting about it or talking about it on your blog at the time where Kolo Touré had strong words with Alex Song because Song was going off here, there and everywhere like he was some kind of a marauding midfield genius. And you said that Song basically ignored Kolo Touré. He ignored the seniority of that player. And nothing happened. There was no consequences of that. And it goes back that far where players are not accountable either to the manager or to themselves. That even when senior players want to take up, take other players to task or take issue with what they're doing, they're not backed up. And it was obvious yesterday. Where was anybody on that pitch saying, look, just get fucking organised? And we've asked that question countless times. And the answer is that there's nobody. There's nobody in that team who is willing to be a leader, to just even stand up. You know, it's all well and good throwing your arms up after we concede a goal. Maybe try and do it before we concede a goal.
Of course. But it's telling that you pick an example from so many years ago, because that is the issue, right? It is an ingrained cultural problem at Arsenal. About a lack of responsibility. I mean, maybe there is a guy in the squad who does have a bit of that about him, and that might be the club captain, Per Mertesacker, but his position in the squad, I think, is being incredibly undermined at the moment by the fact that he's not being selected. I think that it's pretty clear Arsene Wenger doesn't really consider him a first-choice player, so I think it's probably more difficult for him to act upon that authority.
Yeah.
And I think, I think it's been going on for years. And I think that all the players are getting away with stuff and are guilty of hiding to an extent and not stepping up and taking ownership of the situation. And that is not in any way, because I know Gary Neville really laid into the players on Sky, and he seems to stop short often of criticising Arsene Wenger. But I think that, you know, I don't think it's mutually exclusive, basically. I think the players need to take more responsibility, but I think that the way they behave is an indictment of the manager, because it is a culture that he has created.
Of course. They're all his players. Every single one of them is a player that he has bought or brought through, spent money on or developed through the youth academy. Every single one of those players. So there's nobody, you know, you look around and, you know, I felt a bit sorry for Petr Cech yesterday, because he was, you know, just unable to do anything about anything that was going on ahead of him.
Well, he made plenty of saves as well.
I felt sorry for Rob Holding. Manager leaves him out against Stoke because he had a difficult game against Leicester on the opening day, and then throws him into that. That's so damaging for a young player, because all it does is it exposes his shortcomings, which he obviously has, because he is a young central defender. They need to learn. And there's a difference between having a difficult time and learning from your mistakes and being absolutely hung out to dry, like so many young players have been hung out to dry before. Think of the young players that have come through and we've been excited by over the last number of years. Hector Bellerin, Alex Iwobi, Rob Holding's another one. I'm trying to think of a couple more, but I'm sure there are examples where they come into the side, and because they're not inhibited by this culture of this culture of mediocrity, maybe, or just the inability that we have to be confrontational. Confrontation is important because it helps you solve problems. I'm not saying people should be fighting, but just this willingness to accept, that's what he does, and that's what he does. They're not weighed down by it at first, and they come through and they look good and they look exciting and they look full of promise. But eventually, the weight of it all just gets on top of them, and they become like this part of this homogenous, gloopy group of players who all have the same kind of issues and the same kind of failings.
And we will get onto it, I'm sure. But it is a problem that runs right through the club, from the playing staff to the dugout to the boardroom. There are lots of people picking up salaries and going through the motions, and it's a huge issue. Arsenal are not really a serious club. Arsenal do not look like a team that is set up to be truly competitive, a club that is set up to be truly competitive. And actually, the players who want to leave the club, it's very easy as fans of our club to look at them and highlight their flaws and question their motives and their desires. But I have to wonder, if you are a serious professional, if you are an Alexis Sanchez, as I say, and you're part of this, I can't see why you would think it's worth sticking around. I think you would look at this club and think, I need to get out of here.
Mm. Yeah, look, I get that. But at the same time, all these players play their part in this as well. You know, I completely agree with you in that sense, but they're also part of it. So I don't want to make excuses for them. Like someone like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain yesterday, I mean,
He was poor. I don't know why he was out on the field.
Exactly.
To be honest.
I mean, that's it. You know, you can be absolutely critical of his performance yesterday, and he was abysmal, but he wasn't the only one. But you've got to ask, why the fuck is he out there? Having met the club last week, turned down a new deal, maybe not worth 180 grand, but turned down a new deal, told the club that he's not willing to sign, that he wants to leave, and could this week go to Chelsea. And why are we playing him so we can play Hector Bellerin on the left-hand side? What is going on? Why is he making decisions like that?
I don't know. I don't know. And it's obviously the frightening thing is that there is no one really to challenge it, you know, and no one seems determined to. I mean, one of the most depressing elements I found of yesterday's game were the shots of the bench.
Mm.
I don't know if you, every time they cut to the bench, it was just a group of people sat, you know, with their hands stroking their chins, with no sense of urgency, no sense of, can we change this? What can we do? They were so passive. And Arsenal are so passive in everything they do, on the field, off the field.
Yes.
They just let disaster wash over them.
Mm.
And it is agonising to watch.
You're absolutely right there. And I think passive is the right word, because the performance was so passive yesterday. You know, the moment, for example, probably first half when Mesut Ozil had his foot on the ball. And I can't remember who came in and took the ball off him, but it was like someone robbing candy from him.
It was Ursula Ramsey, wasn't it? Deep, yeah.
Yeah, but like he just stood there. But, you know, what? Where was the shout from his teammates? Yeah. Where's man on? You know, it's that kind of thing that permeates right throughout the team, right throughout the performance yesterday. There was nobody. The one moment of the game that I kind of enjoyed was Rob Holding just clattering into Jordan Henderson late in the second half, just because it was something where he went, fuck it. You know, you could see that maybe there was a little bit of frustration or what have you. But you're right, it's passive on the pitch, off the pitch, board level. You know, there are people at that football club who didn't want Arsene Wenger to sign a new deal, but who are quite happy to sit around and pick up their gigantic salaries, even though they've been completely and utter emasculated by the decision of Stan Kroenke to back Arsene Wenger. But they're happy to sit there. They're happy to talk about a catalyst for change. Ivan Gazidis, obviously, I'm talking about here. Catalyst for change. What the fuck kind of change has there been? None. We hired a lawyer and we brought Jens Lehmann in to do something that we don't quite know what it is. Some first team coaching.
And he's one man who wasn't on the bench yesterday.
No, he's not. I mean, that was the idea. I don't think he was more a man in the stands like Boro Primorac.
Yeah.
That was going to be his remit. But beyond that, where is the change? Where is the catalyst for change from Ivan Gazidis? It's, you know, it's just very difficult to take, isn't it?
It's frightening how quickly the kind of bubble of the FA Cup win has burst. And, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, something that you were talking about before is the players. What I always think about this Arsenal situation is, what would you think if it was another club? If you were watching this as another team, what would you think? First and foremost, as much as it embarrasses me to say this, you'd probably find it hysterical that, like, the degree to which the players are not applying themselves and seemingly have no coherent plan. You'd find that very, very funny that a club with Arsenal's resources continued to perform in that manner. But you'd also think, these guys do not give a shit one way or the other what becomes of this manager. I'm convinced you would think that. In fact, you'd almost think they were willing a change.
Well, that's what I've said. Like, the barometer of a football club is what happens on the pitch. And when you see players who've given up after three games of the season, or who can't be arsed to try after three games of the season, it speaks to fundamental issues. A lack of faith in the manager, in the club, the direction of the club, in each other perhaps as well, in terms of the team selections. I mean, what must the players be thinking when we've got a £50 million striker brought in to make the difference in big games and he's left on the bench?
I mean, I've no idea, because, you know, Scott, I don't know if you watched the Sky coverage. They did a big sit down with Thierry Henry and Lacazette. I bought the Sunday papers, I bought the Observer, and I was reading Amy wrote a great piece about Lacazette, and Arsene had been waxing lyrical about him in the build up, how he's settling in. And then for him to be on the bench, you know, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And you know I'm a fan of Danny Welbeck, but he does not look sharp in front of the goal at the moment. When he went through with that chance, I did not expect him to score.
No.
And when you've got someone who's your club record signing, who you've brought in to solve that problem, for them to not be picked, as soon as Arsene Wenger made that decision, I thought, well, whatever the if the result in this game goes against him, that is obviously going to be held up as a major fault on his part. I was staggered by it. I was staggered by the Oxlade-Chamberlain thing.
Yeah.
This is a guy who is playing forcing Hector Bellerin to play out of position and wing back against a guy in Mo Salah who has started the season really well and gave him a torrid time on that side in the first half. And we just, it beggars belief. You've got another left back who was the best left back in Bundesliga last season, sat on the bench.
Yeah, and look, Oxlade-Chamberlain is not a defender. And whatever you think about wing-back being a position in which a player can get forward to good effect, which it is, there is a fundamental need to be able to defend. And we saw yesterday that he is, A, not willing to do it at times because he allowed players to run past him without the required effort to get back into position. But B, because he's just not naturally a defensive player. His brain doesn't work like that. He doesn't see the danger. He doesn't see what's going on around him. So it was
I'm not a coach, but what's Liverpool's most dangerous area? It's the wide attack. It's Mane and Salah. So why at wing back have you got one guy who's a winger and one guy who's on the wrong side?
Yeah.
It was absolutely insane. I mean, I can't. Arsene Wenger's decision, I listened to Tim Steelman on the Arsecast last week on Friday, and he was saying, I think it was on the Arsecast, that for a long time he's been trying to justify Arsene Wenger's decisions and find a rationale behind it. And he's now at the point where maybe he thinks, I don't know if there is a rationale anymore. I think these are just bad decisions. I think this is someone who doesn't necessarily have a grand plan or know what he's doing. And I empathise with that point of view because it is impossible to make sense now of some of what is going on the field. We will talk, I'm sure, about the grander issues at the club and the hierarchy and the boardroom. But, first and foremost, you have to deal what's happening with on the pitch. And that is an absolute mess.
Yeah, there's no two ways about it. There really is no two ways about it. You know, the idea that these guys can't even be bothered going through the motions, can't even be bothered to try looking like they're trying, is just so, so worrying. And, you know, I do wonder what Arsene Wenger thinks of that, because he will have looked at that performance. Whatever you think of him, he's not a stupid man. He's an intelligent man who's been around football for a long time, who will have seen this kind of situation at other football clubs, like we all have. We've seen teams that have given up on the manager, and their performances reflect that. And he must be aware that certain players that he's got in his side are simply not doing it for him. And quite what he's going to do about it, I don't know.
But realistically, that was the case last season, for the majority of last season, and the majority of the season before.
So I don't think it was as acute, James, to be honest. You know, I thought really the period between the end of January and the end of March last year was the first time I really, really thought that he had lost the dressing room. We've had some bad spells before, you know, some bad results, but generally speaking, we have a couple of bad results and get ourselves out of it and go on a decent run and then have a couple of other bad results. But what happened last season between the end of January, the end of March was to me a real shift in terms of his authority over the players and the way that the players thought about him. Because we hear all the time about how they respect him, how they want to do it for the manager. They don't want to let the manager down. But, you know, you can talk a good game all you want. But we saw what happened on that pitch at Anfield on Sunday. We saw with our own eyes. We don't need to look at the statistics. We don't need to look at distance covered, passes completed, any of that kind of stuff. We saw what they did and how they did it. And the only conclusion that you come to is that they no longer believe in him or each other or the club individually and collectively. And that was completely and utterly reflected in that performance.
I mean, I this sounds horrible, but in a way, I hope they do want the manager out, because if they don't, it's arguably more frightening. If they don't and they're just happy to carry on as they are, picking up their pay packet and kind of muddling through and finishing fourth or fifth or sixth every season, that troubles me more. That acceptance troubles me more than wanting to be better. If they want to be better, if they want to be coached, if they want to be prepared, if they want Arsenal to improve, I kind of have more time for that. Even though it is kind of a disloyalty, I can see what drives that. But if it's just, well, I don't really care and I know there are repercussions and I'm happy to sign new contracts and stick around and keep earning, then I think that's inarguably a bigger problem.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to think. I think there's certainly an element with players who want to leave because they just don't see themselves fulfilling their ambitions, their sporting ambitions at the club. And the knock-on effects of that are obvious as well. That if you start losing one or two big players, then everyone else starts questioning what's going on. Everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to absolve Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain of anything. He was appalling yesterday, and I think that, obviously, it sounds like he's been a nightmare in these contractual negotiations, and I don't think he's a particularly special player. But if you're him and you're looking at it, you're going, well, OK, maybe I'm not the best player, maybe I'm not the most consistent. I need to learn. I need to improve. I need to be coached. I need to develop in a position. I need some kind of tactical grounding in order to become the best player I can be and to win stuff, the big, big stuff. I can see that he might look around him and go, that's not going to happen here.
Yeah.
And that's not to absolve him of anything, but it's to illustrate that Arsenal is not a healthy place to be right now for anybody.
No, I mean, the only way that you can... I think the only way that you can turn this around is with a new manager.
Mm.
I really
but
do.
I agree with you, and I really felt that last season. You know, I really didn't want Arsene Wenger to extend his contract. I didn't want him to extend it in 2014 either. But we are here now, and it's a... That's the worst part, isn't it? This sense of we're three games into a two-year contract that none of us have any belief, real belief, will be broken.
Yeah. Yeah, three games into 2 years, more of this. That's the issue, isn't it? It's like he's done an amazing job at times, and he's turned situations around when it looked like it was impossible to do that. He's done it in the past, but I just wonder if the weight of it all now becomes a bit too much, that it becomes impossible to change people's minds, to motivate them. You know, we talked last season about how we felt like some of the messages that he was giving on the training ground weren't getting through. The performances reflected that, the way that the players played, the way that the team was set up. I mean, it's more confusing than ever this season. And if players, I mean, if yeah. we as fans are confused by what's going on, surely those players must be confused as well. And again, like you, I'm not absolving them of their responsibility when it comes to what happens on the pitch. But if you lose faith in somebody who's instructing you every week, if you don't believe in what they're telling you, it becomes obvious. And I think that's what's happening. And in order to, like, if you let's talk about someone like Thomas Lamar at this moment in time. He could be. Yeah. No, I'm just saying that, you know, the stories this morning that he could be going to Liverpool after we've been pursuing him all summer long. We've been unable to do the deal with Monaco. And I don't think there's any way that if you're Thomas Lamar right now, you look at Arsenal and say, that is the club for me. Everything seems to be A-OK there. Sure, it's a big club. It's a big reputation. Great history with French players. But is that really the healthiest place for me to be right now? Whereas if it's Arsenal with a new manager, somebody who's been given license to do their own thing, to change the culture of the club, to impose their own will on the team, to make big decisions, somebody new and fresh, then maybe you could say, that's a club for me because I want to go with that manager. I want to help turn things around. But right now, I don't know what the fuck we're going to do. And the idea that people are still clinging to the transfer window as a way of getting ourselves out of this, to me, just seems utterly implausible.
About the transfer window. Honestly, I couldn't give a shit what happens in the next few days because I know that it will only ever do so much. You know, we've bought players, we've spent money in the past, and
spent money this summer, and we're not using the players.
Yeah, and the Arsene Wenger is sometimes more revelatory in his interviews with the French media than the English, and he said something after yesterday's game that I found very telling. He was speaking to one of the French TV stations, and he said there is a lot of uncertainty surrounding the club at the moment, and I just thought, after everything we went through last season, the cloud that hung over us for so many months, isn't it incredible that having had the manager extend his contract and having had a summer to prepare, that it feels in some ways like there is more uncertainty, or at least as much uncertainty now as there was then? And well, isn't that an astonishing failure?
It's just transferred. The uncertainty has gone from the manager to the players. That's the difference. Last season, it was all about what Arsene Wenger was going to do with his contract. It became a mushroom that hung over us. Do mushrooms hang over you? You know, just a big...
It would be scary if they did, so yeah. I think that's probably appropriate.
A big cloud that was over us. And then as soon as that was sorted out, then we've got the players. It's Ozil, it's Alexis, it's Oxlade-Chamberlain, it's Jack Wilshere. You know, we've 9 players out of contract at the end of this season and a further 8 players at the end of the following season. So the failures go not just to the manager and his either unwillingness or the board's unwillingness to deal with the situation last year, to just make a decision, even if it wasn't the right time, at least it was a decision that you could say, look, it's done, get over it. But now it's just on the players. And, it comes from the very top of the club. We talked about how there's a culture of complacency or comfort where nobody is accountable to anybody else. And when you have an owner who, quite frankly, does not care about Arsenal Football Club beyond what it will make him from a financial point of view, when that culture comes from the very top of the club, it is little wonder that it seeps all the way through. All the way through. Because Wenger is not accountable to Kroenke. Kroenke's not accountable to anyone else. Ivan Gazidis can make a power play against the manager, lose, and still stay, and then go on Sky Sports and talk to Gary Neville about what it was a great thing that Arsene Wenger was going to stay. You read the interview that he gave the official site after Wenger's contract was renewed, and it is the greatest thing of all time, when he clearly didn't want him to sign. So where are your morals? Where's your spine? Where's your backbone there? Sure, it's a lovely job, and who wouldn't turn down £2 million a year? But, if you've got some integrity, then you walk away from that. Ivan Gazidis could get another job easily enough. He'd get another job in football.
I was convinced it was either bullshit. At the end of the season, that one would stay, one would go. I mean, I have to say that my instant reaction to that is to think, well, would it be better if he walked? Because at the end of the day, what you get then, you lose the one guy off the board who seems to be in touch enough with the situation to know we require a change in manager, and you probably replace him with someone else who's an Arsene Wenger appointment. Is that better? I don't know.
Look, I don't know either. I mean, I just feel like when stuff like that is tolerated or becomes acceptable, that you only foster that culture that's there. That if you really believe very strongly as the chief executive of a football club that the manager should not get a new contract, if you're overruled, emasculated by the owner, and then you go out and give fluffy TV interviews, fuck you. That's what I think about that. Fuck you. If you're happy just to pick up the money, then fine. But you're part of the problem.
You are part of the problem. But is not the problem. I mean, at the end of the day, Gazidis was right about that. He was right about the manager, and it's all on Kroenke for making the conservative choice that, he felt would help probably stand the best chance of continuing to bring in that Champions League money and not create the most unrest. For me, the owner is a huge problem, a huge problem. And I look at Liverpool, actually. And Liverpool aren't, the best model. They're not exactly out there winning the Premier League every year, but they do have owners who have learnt from what happened when there was an ownership that the fans really took against. When it was, Gillette and Hicks and, Liverpool fans were up in arms about that. I think it means that John Henry now, who controls Liverpool, has to behave in a way that is relatively accommodating to fans. And he has a consciousness of that, you pray that the next owner of Arsenal will respond in a similar way. But how will that ever come about?
Well, the only way that it can come about is if there is some concerted focus on Stan Kroenke. And I'm not confident that just protesting or anything else will make that much difference to him, because he can sit miles and miles and miles away on his ranch in Texas and not give a fuck about anything. But I think if people are fed up with the manager, there ought to be a bit more focus on the owner as well, because he is a big, big part of this problem. He's the one
gave him the contract. Exactly. Yeah,
exactly. Since he's taken over, he's prevailed over this stagnant era at Arsenal, and it's kind of hard to tell you that as well, because we've won three FA Cups and had really enjoyable days, but like, it's the problems seem to be getting worse, and I think there does need to be more focus on Stan Kroenke and the effect that he is having on this football club and the way that it's being run.
Yeah, and I come back to it, I don't think it's necessarily the right thing at all. But, you know, Manchester United sacked Louis van Gaal after he won the FA Cup. I mean, the FA Cup is fantastic and we've had brilliant days, but I don't think it can be allowed to cloud what's happening to the club more gradually in terms of our league position, which is going down. You know, we dropped out of the Champions League last year. You look at it this year, it's very, very, very difficult to be confident of correcting that anytime soon. And, yeah, I think a lot is on the owner. A lot is on the owner as well. You know, we are tired of the manager's choices, but ultimately we're asking him to fall on his own sword. And a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people have to have the axe come for them. And there's no one at Arsenal with both the power and the willingness to wield that axe.
Yeah.
So we are kind of stuck, you know. And I think the important thing as fans is I don't know the answers to this yet, and we get a lot of questions about this, but I don't know the way forward. But I think the important thing is that we as supporters do our utmost to not be sucked into the passivity as well, because that would be very easy. It would be very easy to get tired of watching this team, for your support to wane, for your passion for the inherent values of the club to wane. I do think that as supporters, you know, we need to try and stay engaged and have an eye on how we move forward. And I don't know the practical steps, but you know, we are the constant. We are the constant, and we are the thing that will outlast all these people. But it is draining, and I can understand people who tweet me saying, "I'm not watching anymore. I haven't renewed my season ticket." I understand that entirely, but I think that our passivity will only lead to more problems for this football club.
Yeah, fair. I know there are a lot of supporters groups out there. There are people, you know, in charge of those supporters groups who are mandated to represent fans. So we'll obviously have to wait and see if they've got something to say, or if they are going to organize something that might, I guess, put the focus on the big issues at this football club, because it's wrong just to look at Arsene Wenger. He is a big issue, but he's not the only issue. He's not the biggest issue at this football club. That we've got to look at the big, big picture and what the future might hold for Arsenal, because it's quite scary. Because if Kroenke just is happy to go along picking up the TV money, not much is going to ever change. I don't see Arsene Wenger being the kind of man who would walk away from his contract, from his work, from his life's work. But I do think you're right that sometimes the axe needs to come for somebody, that it becomes difficult for somebody who's so in the football club or trying his best. Because I don't believe that he isn't trying his best. It's just that his best is just not good enough anymore. That's the problem, I think. And maybe he needs to be taken aside and needs to be told that by somebody that he trusts. I know he's got friends in the game, Arsene Wenger. You know, you think of someone like David Dean, who could maybe bring home a few home truths. But I think he's so wedded to his work that Arsenal is his life. Football is his life. And he can't envisage what it might be without either of those two things.
Yeah, I think people often think, oh, Arsene, you're in danger of damaging your legacy. I honestly think, I don't know Arsene Wenger, you know, but I honestly think that his legacy for him, he doesn't really care. He's not someone who cares about, as far as he's concerned, he'll be gone then. He cares about the present moment. He loves the weekly, daily competition. And I think that that's the hardest thing for him to let go of. And I think that he will run himself into the ground because he can't walk away.
Yeah.
But that decision was, you know, the sort of Damoclean sword was hanging in the spring. You know, he was wavering. I mean, there were times he said things in press conferences where I was convinced, well, he will go.
Yeah.
And he has since convinced himself, or convinced the board, that it's right for him to do another 2 years. And I mean, to be honest, I feel for him. I feel for him because he's neglected so many chances to leave this club on a high, and I can't help but feel that that is going to come back to bite him in a very painful way. And, yeah. and that makes me sad, because what a time it would have been to go out after beating Chelsea in the FA Cup final. What an escape. What a miraculous escape to leave with that trophy, given the state the club was in just a matter of weeks before. And now we're back there again, and the road ahead looks so much trickier. I mean, look at the next 2 years. Look at this season for a start. We've got a week of this transfer window. God knows how we're going to negotiate that. Then we've got this season to get through to try and get back into the top four. I mean, that shouldn't even be the aspiration for this club, but that's what we're faced with. And then look at what next summer potentially holds. We are... you know, to borrow a phrase from Andre Villas-Boas, potentially at the start of a horrible negative spiral, and it's 2 years that Arsene Wenger's signed up for when he could have walked away a hero.
Yeah.
It's a grim thought.
Yeah. You know, I agree with you. I think it would have been an amazing time for him to go after beating Chelsea in the FA Cup final. It would have been a real genuine high, and there would have been so much goodwill, and rightly so. Rightly so. But I also wonder if Arsene Wenger feels like he has some kind of responsibility to the club in a way that, you know, people will say, well, he's doing it for his £8 million a year or whatever. And I'm sure that's not an afterthought in any way. But it feels to me like he's aware of the issues and didn't want to leave the club in a difficult position like that, but by staying has only exacerbated the difficulties that we have and that we face. It's not, whatever way you look at it, whatever way you try, whatever viewpoint you try and come at it from, it's not a healthy situation at this football club right now. There's nothing healthy about what's going on at the board, on the pitch, on the training ground, at managerial level. You know, to hear fans... and I understand why, singing during the Liverpool game, 3 games into the new season, 3 games into a 2-year contract, to hear fans singing, "We want Wenger out," it just makes you so worried for what's coming, what lies ahead. I mean, because you're just clinging on by your fingernails already. You're firefighting. It has the potential to get much worse and much uglier. And that might be the only way that things change, if it does get worse and if it does get uglier.
But Andrew, you know, we're 3 games into the season, we've got 1 win, and arguably we were quite fortunate to get that.
Yeah.
It's scary times indeed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I spoke to Tim Steelman yesterday, who was there at the game, and I said, you know, was there the same kind of vitriol that you saw at Selhurst Park earlier in the spring? You know, were the fans furious with the players? And he said, to be honest, no. Because there is that horrible kind of acceptance of, well, look, we made our voices heard. We said what we thought. We weren't listened to. This is what we've got for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is as frightening as anything. That idea that we're kind of locked into this is what makes it so gloomy, because your optimism is drained from you by the lack of hope for change.
Yeah. It's like being in a locked room and just not seeing any way out. Eventually, what do you do?
It couldn't be further from the catalyst for change, could it? It couldn't be further.
No, there's no change. It's the same old, same old, same old, same old.
Mm.
Right. Should we take a little break?
Yes, let's take a break, a needed break.
A needed break. I'm just going to go get some morphine, and we'll be back with your questions and more in part two.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is the part of the show where we answer the questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnerblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thearsblog. Normally, James, there's a fair amount of variety in the questions that we're sent. I think that's reflective of our intelligent, erudite listenership. They give us plenty to work with. Today, it's not so much. There's a lot of ranting. Not too many questions, and a lot of the questions are just like, what the fuck, why, etc., etc. So it's a bit more limited for us to work with in that regard, but we will do our best.
I think we can understand, I guess, people's people's frustration.
Of course.
Hopefully we've dealt with some of those big questions anyway in the first part. But should we have some questions anyway? Let's make a fist of this second half.
Yeah.
Unlike Arsenal yesterday.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll go first. So a few people chimed in with this kind of question. This is from Alan Moore on the Facebook. He says, we're in an awful state. We're not going to get a new manager and highly unlikely we'll challenge for the league. So should we sell our want-away players, reinvest and use this season to bed in new players so they're ready for next season? I can't believe I'm already putting my hope into next season. And Runar Hansen on Twitter also said, are we better off selling Ox, Ozil and Sanchez now, try to restart the club and the squad?
Maybe, at least it would show that we're doing something. But again, I come back to the idea that if you sell those players, how do you then sell Arsenal as a club, as a destination for possible arrivals? Mm. You know, if you say to a player right now, come to Arsenal, you can play with Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil, then that's attractive. If you say to a player, come to Arsenal, you can play with Aaron Ramsey and Granit Xhaka, it's not as attractive. And that's not to be, you know, critical of them as players, but that's just the reality of it. Again, you know, I find it hard to, like, I like the idea of a reboot where you just say, okay, if you don't want to be here, fine, you can go. But I don't think reboot is possible without a total reboot. Comes back to the manager. I don't think Arsene Wenger at 67 years of age, nearly 68 years of age, is the man to reinvigorate the squad, to set us on a new path. We're way down the Arsene Wenger river at this point, and I just don't see how he's going to be able to do that. So I can see the sense of it, to be perfectly honest, but I don't think that he's the man to do it.
It's that mad thing, isn't it, where he signed a two-year contract and everyone's looking at going, potentially it's his last 2 years. So you'd think there'd be a real concerted effort to kind of build a successful side in that period. But actually, it feels like, looking at the situation for most of the playing staff, a period of constant transition that will never actually come to any kind of fruition. It seems almost impossible. I think it's too late in the summer to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think if you were going to make that decision, you had to make it when those players first indicated they wouldn't be signing a new contract. I knew that really towards the end of last season. And I think if you'd said at that stage, well, look, we're going to sell Alexis, we're going to sell Chamberlain, maybe we're going to sell Ozil if we can find a buyer, but this is the plan for who to replace them, and we've got all summer to do the deal, to get those people in place. But at this point in the calendar, I feel like you'd lose them and have next to nothing really to bring in their stead. I mean, on the other side of the coin, I kind of think, like, what have you got to lose? I mean, if Arsenal lost a couple of big players now, I still think, when I look at the rest of the Premier League, they're probably going to be the sixth best team. Like, without Alexis even, I think they're probably going to be the sixth best team. And I don't think that with him, they're going to be much better. But so I almost feel like the stakes aren't that high.
Are we going to be the sixth best team when we can't even be a rabble like Stoke? Are we really?
Maybe not. You know, maybe I'm being optimistic.
Maybe so. I mean, I can see. Look, I see people talking about the squad and everything else, but you know, I don't think the fundamental issue is the quality of the players. That's not to say they couldn't improve in some way. Of course they could. You could do business. I think we've hung on to a couple of players for too long. But I think in general, the quality, the technical level of the players is pretty good. It's to do with how they're being set up. It's to do with how they're being managed. It's to do with how they're being coached. It's to do with how the team is being selected.
Yeah, I mean, look at the midfield. I don't really believe that Wijnaldum and Emre Can are significantly superior footballers to Xhaka and Ramsey. I don't really believe that. Oh, you're silent, though, so maybe you
do. No. I was just letting you talk. But, I mean, I think what you look at the way Ramsey played, it was far too individualistic. I like Aaron Ramsey. I think he's got some great qualities as a footballer, but he would drive me mad. If he was in my team, I would fucking have him by the neck, literally, for not doing his job, for not doing the first job that he's there to do. And even if he is being instructed by Arsene Wenger, have a free role, roam about the pitch, do what you like, get into the box late. There must be something in him, surely, where he thinks, actually, you know, I could help out a bit here. I could do a bit more to help my team defensively. And if he isn't thinking that, then there's something really wrong with him.
Xhaka, well, I think there might be something quite wrong with him. And that's only because, more than pretty much any player in that squad, he is an Arsene Wenger player. Like, he came here at 16, 17. He has spent most of his football education under Arsene Wenger. It's not like he's like, well, when I played with this team, we were more like this. Or when I played under this manager, we were more like that. So I've got that ingrained in me. Mm. He only knows how to play for Arsene Wenger. So, you know, I kind of think he's been coached in isolation, and that's part of his problem.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I know Xhaka's limitations have been exposed a bit in the last few games, but it's hard not to feel a little bit sorry for him. One man midfield against three Liverpool players yesterday, with nobody helping him.
I must say, it's weird, the Xhaka one, isn't it? Because I feel like going into this season, I think lots of Arsenal fans were really optimistic about what he would be able to produce this season. I think that's because of the way he played towards the back end of the last campaign, some signs we saw in pre-season. But he's had a really, I mean, disastrous start to the season. I mean, in terms of conceding possession at costly times, you know, I know there's a lot that happens between that and the ball hitting the net, and there are other players who should assume more defensive responsibility. But
yeah,
it's been pretty awful for him so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways he's been a bit unlucky. But certainly there's been a carelessness to his game which has been exposed. But I think particularly yesterday, when his pass didn't reach Hector Bellerin, you know, three central defenders in there. Firmino's not the biggest guy in the world. There was no defensive desire. There was no aggression in our defending to make sure that we were the ones to get to the ball first. So there's a lot on the defense as well.
But, I mean, the man marking Firmino, if you watch it back, is actually Salah. Like, if Firmino doesn't put it in, Salah's completely free, stood right next to him. So, yeah. I mean, we haven't actually dealt with the specifics of the game too much, but the way in which the players, inverted commas, chased back on some of those Liverpool goals was shocking.
Yeah, well, that goes back to what we were talking about, the lack of application and some of the players just dialing it in. But, you know, you look at all the goals. First goal, mistakes. Second goal was one of our attacks that broke down and they countered and we didn't get back quickly enough. If people had put more effort in, we could have blocked that Mane shot. Third goal, a mistake from Hector Bellerin. Fourth goal, like, why the fuck are we left so exposed at the back? You know, we're 3-0 down away from home. There's no way we're getting back into that game. Just stay organized and just try and minimize the humiliation. But one of the things that Arsene Wenger said after the game, he was asked why the team played the way it did. And he was asked this in the post-match interview with Sky, with Jeff Shreves, which I watched. And I looked at Arsene Wenger and thought, Jesus Christ, he looks, you know, completely and utterly beleaguered. Way apart from the Arsene Wenger that won the FA Cup back in May, who looked rejuvenated. He looked like he had the weight of all the worlds on his shoulders after just three games of the season. And he said, look, there are reasons, I don't want to go into them. After the game, he said, it's a difficult question to answer straight away after the game. And there are some reasons, but I don't think I have to come out too much on that now. Ralph Sorry, Ralph Shalson, who's at Carabiner1 on Twitter. He says, what do you think those reasons that Arsene Wenger couldn't or wouldn't talk about might be?
I can only think it's to do with the transfer market. I can only think that he thinks, in much the same way that the uncertainty of his own contract situation seeped into his seeped into the team and you know created that kind of inertia in them in the spring. I can only think that he thinks there are too many players whose heads aren't quite right, and that might have affected our performance. How did you interpret it?
Or
he might just be bullshitting and he's just, you know, buying time and he doesn't know what to say. That is also a possibility.
That was kind of my thinking on it. Like, I don't doubt that there are things that are going on at that football club that might well be having an impact on things. But I wonder how many of those things that are going on at that football club are because of the way that Arsene Wenger is managing it or is being allowed to manage it, you know? Maybe he wants to spend more money. Maybe he's, like, completely happy with his squad, as he said last week. He's very happy with the quality of his squad. You know, I just don't know that there are reasons or conspiracies or hidden things going on that are making this team play the way that they're playing. Are there hidden reasons as to why he's playing players out of position, playing Oxlade-Chamberlain when he's about to sell him? Whose reasons are those? Those are his. So I don't know that there's any vast conspiracy behind the scenes. He's been given the backing of the man who matters the most in that regard, Stan Kroenke. He's got the full thumbs up from Kroenke in terms of a new 2-year deal. He doesn't have to delegate to anybody. He doesn't have to answer to anybody. So to suggest there are things going on that might be hampering him, I don't know. Unless Kroenke is absolutely and utterly withholding money. That in order to keep Alexis, for example, if we were going to get £50 million for Alexis, well, then you've got to raise £50 million from selling players. I don't know. But again, that's us venturing into the realms of conspiracy theories. But I can't think of anything.
Well, I mean, it would be, I know we're both a bit kind of unenthused about the transfer market right now, but it would be kind of remiss of me not to ask you what you think the next few days might hold. This is the last one of these we'll do before the transfer deadline. What do you actually expect to unfold over the next few days?
I expect us to sell Oxlade-Chamberlain, immediately putting our transfer business for the summer into profit. I think we're going to let Mustafi go to Inter Milan on loan for the season with an option to buy. Maybe it's a definite purchase agreement at the end of the loan spell. So that will rob us of another central defender. I expect us perhaps to, under the circumstances, sign a player.
Think there'll be a bit of pressure too, basically, off the back of that result.
Yeah. I think we will sign a player, or at least try and sign a player that might get people excited and on board again, and you know that they'll say, well, look, this shows that we're moving in the right direction. But I think it's driven by what's happening on the pitch in terms of the poor start to the season, and it'll be driven by the market. It's not strategic. It's not something that we have planned. It doesn't speak to a recruitment policy that makes sense, whereas somebody is sitting down, or a number of people are sitting down at the start of the season and saying, or start of the summer saying, where are we weak? Where do we need to improve? Okay, let's do this. Who is underperforming? Who can we live without? Who can we generate some revenue from that we are okay with losing? Bang, bang, bang. And you get rid of those players and you move them on. Like, again, this make it up as we go along transfer activity that has been the hallmark of this club for so many seasons now. Here we are again. We're looking at another August trolley dash. Think of the players that we brought in at the end of August in seasons past, because things have been not quite like this, but not as good as they should have been. There's been pressure. There's been, you know, difficulties going on. Danny Welbeck, Lucas Perez, Godran Mustafi, Per Mertesacker, Mikel Arteta, Andre Santos, Park Chu-young, Yossi Ben-Ayoun. How many of those players you could say were a genuine, genuine success at Arsenal?
Mm. Mm.
That I'm sure I'm forgetting some others as well. So I think that's where we're heading. I think that's where we're heading. Another kind of, oh, fuck, we better do something, transfer, end to the transfer window.
Well, look, Paul Kenny on Twitter, sorry, says, Liverpool are in for Lamar this morning. How much of an indictment is it on Arsenal if they manage to get that over the line? A significant one, no?
Yes. Yeah. Because we were in for him. We couldn't get the deal done. We couldn't persuade Monaco to sell. I mean, this
we're
was
the only club who can't persuade Monaco to sell.
I mean, this is the kind of player that Arsene Wenger would have had no problem attracting a few years ago because of his reputation, because of the reputation of Arsenal, because of his reputation for improving players. Like, think about it. Who is the last player that's come to Arsenal who has improved over the course of their time at the club, who wasn't an established star, an established talent? Who is it?
It is hard to say. I mean, I actually think Alexis Sanchez has improved at Arsenal, but because, you know, he's been given more license at Arsenal. But he, as you say, he was very established before. In terms of someone who's been... You know, it's like when we were talking about signing Mbappe and Lamar, the references cited were people like Henry and Vieira. And without exaggeration, those are 20 years ago.
Mm. Yeah.
And Anelka, you know. I don't know.
I think Koscielny.
Koscielny. Maybe Giroud.
Yeah, Giroud is a good one, to be fair. And again, we go back to Giroud getting a bit more stick than he deserves. But he has improved, but he is fundamentally limited in terms of what he brings you as a centre forward. Like, he hit his ceiling at Arsenal, and it's a good ceiling, but not if you're the main striker for a club like Arsenal that has supposedly got ambitions for winning the league. But I think Giroud is a decent shout as well. But again, we go back to young players, to this the project, the British core. Jack Wilshere hasn't improved. Aaron Ramsey had a brilliant season. You know, questions have got to be asked about him. Kieran Gibbs hit his ceiling. Carl Jenkinson, Oxlade-Chamberlain. None of them have developed into the kind of players that A, people wanted them to be, or B, people expected them to be under the tutelage of Arsene Wenger. And you have to ask, is he capable of getting the best out of players anymore? And I think the answer is no. Mesut Ozil. Hmm. Supposed to be a game changer. I thought your theory on Ozil was quite an interesting one. Do you want to just expand on that very...
Yeah, all I was saying was that I think Ozil takes a lot of stick after games like yesterday, and actually I didn't think he was any worse than anybody else, to be honest. I think he's kind of an easy win for most pundits. But my basic theory is that when we signed Ozil in 2013, we kind of embarked on a project to construct a team around him, and part of that was switching to a formation with a number 10. Part of that was rejecting the opportunity to re-sign Cesc Fabregas. There was a huge investment financially and in terms of faith in Mesut Ozil as the guy who could be kind of the key playmaker in a side that would compete in the Premier League. And I think fundamentally that project hasn't worked. And, you know, what I said was that our teams are often said to be in the image of their manager, and I think that is always true to an extent, but I think we are somewhat a team in the image of our playmaker, of our key player, Mesut Ozil. We're kind of a bit of a fair-weather side in that respect. And I think that a more ruthless manager probably would have seen that for all Ozil's talent, he probably would have seen earlier on in this process that it wasn't going to be... It wasn't the right project. It wasn't the right form for this team to take, the right shape for this team to take. I don't actually believe in my heart of hearts that a team kind of constructed around the creative talents of Mesut Ozil will actually win the Premier League. I think the Premier League is a different competition, and I don't think Ozil is the same kind of player as a Bergkamp or even a Fabregas, really, as you can do that with.
Let me ask you this, then.
Go on.
Isn't part of a manager's job when it comes to getting the best out of a player, isn't just that player as an individual, it's what's around him. That if a player has X, Y, and Z qualities that are brilliant but lacks A, do you not then put somebody in your team who's got lots of A who can offset that imbalance? I mean, we saw it with Fabregas as well.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And what I would say is that the Ozil project has failed, but that is not all on Ozil. It's also on Arsene Wenger's failure to build the appropriate team around him.
Mm.
And, you know, he hasn't made the necessary adaptations to his team to make it successful. He can't. He's had, what is it, 4 years? He's had 4 years in which to do that, and he hasn't really managed to do it consistently. And I think, you know, I think there would have been a strong argument for abandoning that idea this summer. But this the curious thing about this summer. This is something I heard Elliot from the Arsenal Vision podcast say. It's kind of a real half-assed thing where on the one hand, we've gone, look, we're going to go all out for it this year. We're going to hold on to people for footballing reasons. People like Alexis, people like Ozil, people like Chamberlain. You know, we're going to give ourselves the best chance we can to be competitive. But as you just alluded to, on the other side, we have not done the requisite work to support those players. So we're actually not much better off than where we started. And what it actually looks like is a desperate attempt to cling on to some kind of status, but without any kind of real plan behind it. It's frustrating, and I think that the indictment for Arsene Wenger is not seeing that the path the team is on is not necessarily a path to success. I cannot look at this team now and go, okay, there are problems, but I can see how in 3 years or 2 years they might be improved. Nobody can see that. And even in the dark days post Emirates Stadium where we had to play the kids, you at least had that light at the end of the tunnel. But that light is completely extinguished at this point. It just feels like day by day ad hoc chaos.
Yeah, because you look at what's coming down the line in terms of contracts and everything else, and you can see more easily how it might get worse than it getting better. Right.
Cheerful question section.
Yeah,
anyway,
well, look, you know, we are where we are. What can we do? You know, we are yeah, I can't even fucking think of words anymore. My brain hurts. Adam, who's at the 3-5 Who, wants to know, with our transfer deals and one season seemingly based on the back three, is it too early to scrap it? I said it last week. I think we're going to move away from the back three. And I think our first game back will be...
We're
going to go with a back four. I'm almost positive that the back three is going to come to an end sooner rather than later. Like, he's let two central defenders go. That speaks to a desire.
Well, I think that
well,
must
almost
be part of the thinking with Mustafi, isn't it? If Mustafi goes, I think that's a clear indicator.
What do you think's happened there? Do you think something must have happened? Like, is it just a case that, like, he doesn't rate him and says, okay, he can leave? Because he's only just back after the Confederations Cup. And then all of a sudden, a player who was a fixture in his team last season when he was fit, Mustafi was there. He was in the team with both a back three and a back four. He was the middle man in the back three in the second half of the season until he got that injury and, you know, missed the games through concussion. That for him to decide all of a sudden that a £35 million signing is expendable and he's willing to let him go on loan, not just sell him. It's not because somebody has come in and said, we'll give you... Look at all this money we'll give you for Mustafi. It's too good to turn down. We're getting rid of him. It's not a question of selling because a good deal has come along. It feels like we're actually getting rid of him. We're managing a situation that we've got to get this guy out of the club. So it feels like something has happened. I don't know what, but
well, I mean, there's been some talk about, you know, are some of these player acquisitions influenced by StatDNA, the statistics company we acquired, and we had a question about that. We will come back to the back four because I think that needs talking about. But somebody said, it was Rufus Hall on Twitter says, you've both mentioned Mustafi and others being StatDNA signings. Is there any proof of this? Surely it's down to Wenger to make the decision rather than StatDNA. I mean, what do we really know about that situation? I guess the actual intricacies of it are, you know, kind of beyond us. But there are certainly certain players we've signed in recent years where the whispers are that the analytics department had a significant say.
Yeah. I don't know exactly how it works, but surely Arsene Wenger would say, look, find me a player who can do this, that, and the other. StatDNA will identify all those things. I mean, the three players that I can think of who are stat, I don't know whether Xhaka was one, but certainly Elneny was one. Gabriel was one. And I don't know whether Mustafi was one as well. or when we were trying to get somebody else, that DNA came up with Mustafi. But Elneny wasn't even in the squad yesterday. He's been marginalised quite considerably since his arrival. He looked very promising, but again, is not a player that convinces the manager. I mean, you just look at the players over the last number of years that we've brought in who have been cast aside to a certain extent. Lucas Perez, now Mustafi, Elneny, Gabriel. Whether it's stat DNA, I don't know. Whether that's part of the power play that's going on behind the scenes, I don't know. I'd love to know, to be perfectly honest. I'd love to find out what the fuck is going on in that regard and what influence stat DNA has over our incoming arrivals. But there does seem to be some kind of a link between the players that we're letting go and the influence that stat DNA had over the decisions to bring them in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you even look at the case of someone like Lucas Perez. I know for a fact that prior to Arsenal's interest in it, or a bid for him last summer, you know, Arsenal were briefing agents that he wasn't good enough to play for Arsenal, and then he turns up at the club. So there are definitely problems in our acquisition process, in the way we go about identifying talent, and there's clearly differences of opinion between scouting, between analytics, and between the manager as well. And I feel like maybe some of these sales that we're seeing happen are part of the manager reasserting his authority. I mean, the case of Mustafi specifically, who knows? Maybe he's asked to leave. He used to play in Italy. He liked it there. Maybe he wants to go back. Maybe there's been a falling out. Maybe he's just sick of playing in an Arsenal defence, which really exposes some of his weak points. Because let's be honest, it's not like he's looked particularly great shakes since January or so. So I don't know. It's very strange, though. It's a very strange one. As for the back three, the back four, how mad is that? That all through pre-season, we didn't play with a back four. We used a back three. We seemingly signed a wing-back who seemed to fit that system perfectly. And now since then, we've not used the wing-back as a wing-back. We've abandoned the back three in each of our three league games to date. And now I think we are on the verge of returning to the back four on a permanent basis. I mean, that just speaks to the lack of plan, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what's the midfield answer? When Arsene Wenger needed a midfield answer at Anfield to make the back four work, who did he turn to? Francis Coquelin.
Well, that's not Coquelin's fault. You know, I'm not
saying it's Coquelin's fault, yeah. But I'm saying it's not exactly progress, is it?
No, it's not. But
unless Arsene knows something about the fitness of Santi Cazorla that we don't.
Oh, look, come on. You know, I love Santi Cazorla, but Santi Cazorla is he's not a man who's going to fix this. It goes way beyond what Santi Cazorla can bring to this team. Santi Cazorla is going to be 33 soon. And I love him. I think he's a wonderful, gifted footballer. And I wish he'd been around for the last 12, 18 months. I wish he'd been fit. I feel terribly sorry for him that, you know, this part of his career has been absolutely ruined by injury, and he's such a nice, likable guy. But let's not go down the road of thinking that all of what's wrong with this team can be fixed by the return of Santi Cazorla to midfield. You know, his skill sets are amazing, but it goes a lot deeper than that. You know, I think we are going to go back to a back four, but even then, I wonder who are we playing in a back four? Who are our two centre halves? He doesn't want to play Mertesacker.
He doesn't fancy Mertesacker. That's clear.
Rob Holding, like I fear for Rob Holding, a really good player, lots of potential, but he doesn't have anybody beside him to teach him. You need experienced defenders alongside you who can talk to you and teach you how to defend. And I think with Koscielny there, he'll do that. But are we looking? You know, if Mustafi goes, what are we looking at? Koscielny and Monreal? Koscielny in Chambers? I mean, what is the plan there? I can't figure it out. Just cannot, unless there's a signing coming in. But again, who's that guy? Who's the guy to come in and make that defence better? So it's just so hard to understand what's going on from a defensive point of view. But I do think we're moving away from the back three.
Do you think Alexis will still be here on Friday?
If you'd asked me that before the Liverpool game, I would have said yes.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not so sure. But again, I think his destinations are so limited that the likelihood is that, yes, he will be. Because I don't think there's anywhere on the continent that's after him. PSG are going to do...
It's Man City or bust, isn't it, for him? And I don't think
we
won't do that.
If we sell Alexis Sanchez to Man City before deadline day, we might as well just fucking set a torch, you know, set the whole fucking place on fire. Because what's the fucking point? What is the point of anything? What's the point of being a fucking football club if that's what we're going to do? So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen between now and Thursday. I really don't. I'm expecting this evening, Monday evening, as we listen to this, I'm almost certain that there's going to be war chest stories in the papers. There's going to be talk about how we're ready to spend money to turn things around.
Right. Yeah.
If we don't see those stories tonight, even though it's a bank holiday in the UK and maybe some people aren't working and aren't there to, you know, send that brief out, I'd be very surprised, but also very worried. You know, we're going to have a deadline day dash. Guarantee you, we've got to see those stories because otherwise they've just fucking given up. here's a question from Ian Stone, at Ian D. Stone, and he says, how far can we go before Stan bails out?
How far can we go? Pretty far.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I had an interesting message on Twitter yesterday from someone. I mean, I have to be honest, I don't really know all the background around this, but saying that there was an example relatively recently of, I think it was Josh Kroenke rather than Stan, pushing out a coach quite shortly after signing a new contract and sort of showing an awareness at least of fan sentiment. And attempting to be in touch with them. I don't know if there's some kind of hope to be derived from that, but I don't think it's staggering how quickly all the talk of a sale from Stan has died away, isn't it? I mean, the last game of last season, there'd been all those stories about a bid from Usmanov, about another potential buyer. There were chants of "We want Kroenke out," ringing around the Emirates.
I'd like to hear those chants again.
Yeah. Well, I think that's has to happen, really.
Okay, I found that message. It's from Clarence on Twitter, and he says, the Rams fired Jeff Fisher 1 week after they announced his two-year extension that he signed in the summer. Josh Kroenke knew that fans wanted him fired. Is this where we are? Josh Kroenke is what we're... Josh Kroenke is what we're pinning our hopes on.
Yeah, yeah. What? Unless we can get a new owner in, and that means getting the incumbent owner out, and I think that's going to be very difficult to do. He had a very good offer to get out in the spring, and he had no interest in it at all. He had a very good financial offer. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how bad it would have to get. Not even how bad, how vocal it would have to get, you know.
It's a good job this wasn't a video podcast because I just spent the last 30 seconds there with my head in my hands. I really did.
I mean, is it...
Stan won't leave. He won't leave. Like, however bad it gets, you know, the money is still going to pour in. The money's going to come in from TV rights. And there's not that much difference between what you get for finishing 10th and 5th. There isn't really in terms of prize money. You still get overseas rights. And, you know, obviously the Champions League money would be nice. So maybe Stan's ambition would be to get us back into the Champions League places. And he's happy enough with that. But I just think that, yeah.
And also people say hit him in the pocket, and I understand that. But the actual ticket revenue is a relatively low part of Arsenal's income now, as far as I understand it. Especially it's dwarfed by the television money.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Yeah, for most Premier League clubs, that's the case now. The television money is a bigger source of revenue than ticket sales. So even with a half-empty stadium...
And merchandising deals, etc., etc. I mean, you know, there's only so much you can do by not turning up to a game. I mean, especially at this point where so many season tickets are sold. But it can send a message. It can be a visual communicator, which is worth something, I do think.
Yeah, I mean, there's the I don't want to you know, obviously it's a football club, but there's the whole brand value, isn't it? You know,
exactly.
that's the thing. And, you know, Arsenal's marketing department are finding it difficult enough to attract sponsors and partners and all that kind of stuff. Even when we had Champions League football, it wasn't easy. And now when you're a Europa League team who's heading in the wrong direction, I think, based on what we've seen so far from this season, then it's going to be even more difficult. And that will have a knock-on effect. But again, you're talking about that taking 12, 18, 24 months to be really, really visible. And yeah, I just don't know. I don't know what to...
I mean, we're in a situation where we're praying for a white knight, really, aren't we? And even then, you need Kroenke to agree to that.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a white knight? Not sure.
I think the bigger problem is convincing the current owner to sell.
Yeah, yeah. That's not going to be easy. That is not going to be easy. All right. Have we got?
It's never happened before in this case. I don't think
no. Well, that's it. He hangs on to his franchises. Everyone knows that. He's said on the record that he's got no intention of selling. I know that when there were people interested in purchasing his stake, he was quite strident that he had no intention whatsoever of selling. And I don't think that's going to change. Even with lots of people hating Stan Kroenke, he's quite happy being hated. He's quite happy being hated. You know, he moved the Rams from St. Louis to Los Angeles. Doesn't care.
Yeah.
Doesn't care. Everyone there hates him, but he doesn't care because he's got a big new valuable franchise in LA. So what people think of him means little.
No, I mean, he literally doesn't. He lives in another country. I mean, it doesn't affect him. He couldn't care less. Mm. So it's a real problem. It's a real problem. And the reason the focus is on the manager is because that's the easiest problem to solve, actually. Like, you know, changing the manager is quite doable in real terms. Changing the owner is something that's, you know, it's a huge task to push an owner out. But it has been done, but not to him.
Yeah. Yeah. It has been. But it would require something huge and concerted and... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Do you want to talk about something else?
Yeah. What do you want to talk about?
I don't know. Our feelings?
Our feelings, definitely not. That's just going to be more of the same, I suspect. I've absentmindedly just picked up a razor. It was on my desk.
Don't do it! Don't do it, James!
Here, it's a little Gillette disposable, and I've just realised that for the last 10 minutes, I've just been sort of...
Slicing my arm open. There's blood everywhere. I didn't even realise I was doing it. Oh, I'm feeling quite faint now.
I can't believe I've done that. I'm just going to put it quite far away over there.
Yeah, just throw it out the window.
Yeah. No, it's really grim. It's really grim, and actually... It's really sad and frustrating, isn't it, when a couple of games into the new season, you already feel like you don't want to watch Match of the Day.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the thing by which I view my seasons. Can I watch Match of the Day on a Saturday night in 2 weeks in a row? I haven't been able to. Obviously, we played on a Sunday, but you know what I mean, just about watching Match of the Day and... Yeah.
Just, you know, wanting to engage with football and be excited about a new campaign, for that to be... gone quite so quickly is a real shame.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, there is a train of thought that might go, well, you know, you're overreacting, it's three games in, but I don't think we are. I think if anything, we are awakening to the reality, having sort of maybe slightly suspended some disbelief over the summer, because you know, that's the nature of support, being a supporter, isn't it? You allow yourself to feel optimistic, you hope for change, but sometimes the reality is a bit more depressing.
Like I said the other week, you know, I go into the start of every new season, despite what my head tells me, my heart tells me, come on, it's a brand new season, this is it, clean slate for everybody, you never know what might happen, could be amazing. And that's gone now.
And I think, yeah, and I think as well, like, normally we start the season thinking, hey, maybe we'll challenge for the league this year. And then we end kind of in a battle for fourth. And by the time that battle for fourth comes around, we say that's a real downer and really depressing. And I think the kind of awful thing about this season is that from the outset, I think the pretense, any pretense of winning the league is kind of gone. And we know from the very start that the most we can hope for is like, you know, 8 months of a battle for fourth. Mm. And it's, call us spoiled, but it's difficult to get excited about that.
Mm-hmm. It really is. Well, look, you know, I think we've done this one to death, to be perfectly honest, because I can't think of anything else. But I do want to finish on a positive note, if I can. Obviously, you've got a big week coming up, James. Getting married.
That's the deadline. Oh, yeah, getting married, yeah. Will someone scupper the deal? You know, will I be gazumped at the altar? I'm getting married after the transfer deadline on Saturday.
Sensible. Sensible.
Yes. So that will be hopefully nice. I mean, hopefully it'll be better than this. It's an international break, of course. I've timed it very well.
Hopefully my wedding will be better than Arsenal getting beaten 4-0 by Liverpool, says James. I really hope it's better than that.
Had the optimism sucked out of me.
Well, look, I think on behalf of everyone who's listening to this podcast and who listens week in, week out, we thank you very much for that. And especially we thank you on days like today when it's not easy for us to do it, but we know as well that it's not easy for you guys to listen to it. Hopefully it proves in some way cathartic and hasn't completely ruined your mood. But I think on behalf of everyone, I'd like to wish both yourself and Camille a great day on Saturday, and obviously every happiness in the future and for the rest of your lives.
Thank you so much. Yeah, no, listen, it is nice to have something positive on the horizon. And who knows, you know, maybe it is as important as the football. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. On that note, we will leave it there. We will have an Arsecast on Friday, a post-transfer deadline day Arsecast. In fact, there may be a surprise Arsecast later today or tomorrow. You never know if something comes out and things fall into place. In the meantime, though, thanks a million for listening. We know it hasn't been the most cheery one of all time, but that's not our fault.
No,
it's definitely not our fault. We'll catch you on the next one. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.